I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. This is Current Geek. Welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt.
Hey, Scott Johnson. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man. How's your week? How are you doing?
Well, between the llamas and the blue and gold dresses and the net neutrality, I have survived the week.
Yeah. Weird internet day yesterday, that day.
I think people were a little drunk on power.
Yeah, I think so. We'll get to some of that coming up in a second. But first, I want to introduce our guest. We always have fantastic guests. This week is no different. We have with us finally someone we've been holding in the wings for a while. Mr. Chad Johnson, a.k.a. OMG Chad, YouTube creator, host of the GizWiz on Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. Chad, how's it going?
Doing great. I am so excited to be on.
Yeah. Good. Yes. Well, I am braving the worst cough of my life so that we can all hang out and have a good time together. I'm glad you could be here for that.
Hey, guys.
I'm super happy. You almost had to brave some chamomile. Oh, sorry, Tom.
Well, no, I'm sorry to interrupt, Chad. I'm feeling a little left out. Do you mind if I'm Tom Johnson for this episode?
Can you be? Are you all right with that?
Yeah.
I didn't say Tom Johnson, did I, at the beginning?
No, you didn't. Oh. And it struck me.
Oh.
That it hurt.
I was the only one.
Oh, that you're not...
Actually, can I be Don Johnson?
Yeah, you can be Don Johnson anytime you like, man. If you have the Ferrari and you have the notion,
if the Ferrari fits,
yeah, you don't wear socks with your fancy shoes, you're in. Go watch Miami Vice. Ask your parents. Okay. Hey, it's good to have everybody here. It's good to have Chad here, and let's jump right into the top stories.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
We can never have enough Johnsons. Go ahead, Tom.
I am very glad that Chad is here for lots of reasons, because Chad's just an awesome guy, but also because he usually is very positive and cheery, and this is some really damn sad news here. Leonard Nimoy, Mr. Spock from Star Trek, died this morning at his home in Los Angeles. He was 83. Okay, so yeah. He lived a long life. He prospered. Yeah. But we're left behind, and we're sad to see him go. His wife, Susan Bay Nimoy, said that the cause of his death was chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. That's COPD. His granddaughter, Danny, posted on Twitter, he was an extraordinary man, husband, grandfather, brother, actor, author, the list goes on, and friend. Thank you for the warm condolences. May you all, LLAP, which is how he was signing all of his tweets. He would always end it with LLAP for live long and prosper. His final tweet, February 22nd, said, "A life is like a garden. Perfect moments can be had, but not preserved except in memory, LLAP.
Yeah, which is awesome. I was saying this morning on Twitter, wouldn't it be nice if we all had that kind of thing to say as our last tweet? Because I don't, he probably didn't know it was going to be his last tweet. And oftentimes, in fact, there's even a site that's darkly dedicated to people's final tweets before untimely deaths or even timely deaths. And most of them are kind of, like I would do, like, that pizza was gross or, something dumb. He often tweeted and used social media as a way to kind of share bigger ideas and nice thinking and kind of intellectual stuff. And that's a nice thing to have as your sort of last stab in the world of modern social networking, to be a nice comment like that. I thought that was cool. Chad, you're a young guy, but even the young.
I was so affected by this one. I mean, the celebrity deaths in the past year have each really gotten to me. Leonard Nimoy, me and my brother both were big Star Trek fans. My brother was even more, collecting some figures and stuff. I was standing outside checking Twitter and saw it come by, and it was just, oh my gosh. Yeah. What's funny is I thought, like, oh man, how bad would it be if his last tweet was like some weird random thing? So I went to his profile to find it, and it was like, no way that was his last tweet.
Yeah.
Like it was so perfect. And I thought about it while eating breakfast. Basically all breakfast I kept thinking about how lucky we are to be on the planet and to still be in this, garden that is Earth still.
Yeah.
And how perfect it that last message to the world really was.
It really was. And the I found myself regretting something that happened some time ago. And I think I may even have said this to Tom before. I can't remember, Tom. You have to tell me if I have or not. But I think I have stated a couple of times on some podcasts, maybe this one, that I never liked their decision to cameo Spock as an older man into those two Star Trek movies, the new Star Trek films. It bothered me because I felt like it was kind of stunt casting. It's like, all right, we get it. You don't, you know, you can give us a new story. You don't have to bring back somebody from the old cast to do this. But today, after the news broke, I've had a real change of heart about that. Like, I'm really glad we have Spock in that incarnation.
Oh,
in
sure, Scott.
Modern
he just
entertainment.
Had to die.
I know. It's awful. It's awful. Like, it, but doesn't that's what death kind of does, right? It reminds
it
you.
It totally changes. Yeah. Like, the, people talk about this a lot with presidents, and it doesn't matter which party your affection lies. Republicans softened on John F. Kennedy after he died, and Democrats have softened on Richard Nixon. Since he passed away.
Sure.
Now, Kennedy was probably a bad example because it was a more dramatic death, obviously. But even Roosevelt, Republicans hated Roosevelt, and they softened on him after he died. So you become, I think it's just in our evolutionary DNA that after someone's gone, a lot of your reactions to them just drop away and don't matter anymore.
Sure. And in this case, it wasn't even that he was doing a bad job. In fact, I don't have a single thing to say about Leonard Nimoy in the negative. Only one thing that ever bothered me about Leonard Nimoy was a video in 1999 that he was part of, and it's on YouTube, you can see it, where he does a countdown, kind of like the New Year's Eve countdown for the Y2K bug, and tells me about all the terrible things that are going to happen at the end of Y2K. It's a very odd little film. I don't know who commissioned it or why it exists.
I thought you were going to say the Bilbo Baggins song.
No, I embrace that. You have to love that thing. That's one of the greatest things ever. But yeah, like, there's not a bad thing to say about the guy, but it is an interesting idea that people, when we lose one of us, no matter who it is or how adversarial they may have been on this planet or not, there is kind of the sense of, all right, well, we're all kind of doing the same journey here. We're all kind of figure it out and do the one we think is the best way. And when one of us checks out, you kind of have to, you know, you have to kind of be, you have to back off all the temporary stuff and go, all right, you know, he did his best and now he's on his way. In this case, you know, everyone loved Leonard Nimoy. Today has not been a day of, yeah, it's sad and everything, but don't forget that terrible thing he did in the 70s. It's not that kind of, he's not that kind of guy.
Right.
He said, I am not Spock. Right. And I will never forgive him for that.
Right. Only the hard.
You're not seeing that reaction.
Only the hardened nerds would get that worked up about it. But yeah, sad day for everybody. The internet really took heart, and in a way, it was nice because after all this weird llama crap and that dress thing,
okay. I don't want to go straight from you know, very poignantly remembering Leonard Nimoy to talking about llamas and dresses.
Right.
Is it so are we good?
I think we're okay. We can cut. We have made the transition
say.
Has happened. Yeah.
Should
I think
we
we're
all
good.
Should we all rest in peace?
Yes, put the end up. Here's what you should do. Celebrate
live
by
and prosper.
Go and binge watch some Star Trek TOS on Netflix. Watch some of the movies, see some of his other great films that he made, watch In Search Of. See the incredible VO work. He done a lot of cartoons and animated features. I loved his work in that
Civilization as Captain Kipper pointed out.
It's so good on there. He just lended his talents to so much. So go consume it. It's all out there and available freely. Most of it on YouTube in terms of clips. And if you want to see films and stuff, it's all out there. So that's how you should celebrate that, man. Okay, now we've cut the cord. Tom, you can talk about llamas and dresses for a second if you want to.
I would normally just transfer right into that, but it seemed disrespectful.
Sure.
Because on the one hand, the llama chase I totally missed because I was covering the net neutrality stuff like with laser focus at the time. Mm. So I don't know if you guys were caught up in that, but it was done by the time I got into it. The dress thing, I know a lot of people are like, this dress thing is stupid. And I'm like, why do you think it's stupid? Like, why are people angry? I'm like, oh, it is stupid for people to get angry about it. But it's fascinating. Mm. If there's someone who doesn't know what we're talking about, there is a picture of a dress. BuzzFeed made it popular, but it was put on a Facebook page, I think in Scotland somewhere, where people look at it and some people see a white dress with gold fringe, other people see a blue dress with black fringe, and it has to do with the way your brain corrects for the color of light in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at this picture, you're trying to correct for what you think the light is in the room in the picture, not the room that you're actually in, and you correct differently. So I showed it to Eileen before she had ever seen anything about it, and she's like, oh, yeah, it's a blue dress with black fringe. And I'm like, no, that looks white with gold to me. And it still does.
Yeah.
Even knowing, like, it's not one of those things like the lady in the candle where you're like, oh, I can see it now. It's just weird.
It is weird because
really cool.
It's so on the fence of which side do you land on that it literally just falls to one side or the other. Like people are 100% sure they're seeing it one way. Then the other person is sure they're seeing it the other way. And a few people get in there and tweak a little Photoshop up and down. And then suddenly they go the other way with just a tiny hue change or a little bit of a little bit of switch in color or whatever. And I think that kind of thing is fascinating, but the internet's ability to turn that into just ridiculous.
I mean, it was a battle. It was World War III, like over what color was the dress?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I mean, Chad, what did you think when you looked at it? What colors did you see?
The first time I saw it, someone had messaged it to me. Like I messaged it to me and said, what color is this? And so I, looked really close. I said blue with green. That was blue dress, green fringe. And then I went to Twitter and it was exploding. And I had the good fortune of being at Twit. We had just recorded the Gizwiz. And so I started showing it to people. And it was really funny to be there when someone answered, because someone would say blue and black, and the person who saw white and gold would say, like, haha, like you're punking me, like you're joking,
right?
Because this is obviously white and gold. Mm-hmm. And like, why do you three people say this, and I see it this other way. It was really a fun experience to be there in person with people who were just assumed that everyone else was ganging up on them and playing a joke.
Yeah. That might be what happened online, like on the whole. I felt like there were people who were defensive because they felt like somebody was telling them they didn't know what they were looking at, and that's maybe why it snowballed into something weird online. But, I mean, that kind of stuff's always fascinating. And somebody, it may have been Mashable, I can't remember, put up a big link of all these other really cool optical illusions, and some of them dealt with those exact color ranges that were giving people trouble. And that kind of thing is always really fascinating to me. But man, just the noise on Twitter, it was like the Oscars never ended. It just was all day.
I feel like I have superior eyes because I, from the beginning, always saw it as a blue dress with some sort of dark fringe.
Yeah.
So my processing power is better because I got it right.
That's right. The people who...
Well, well, it's funny. The Wired article on the science behind this talked about how their senior art designer saw white and gold. Mm. And was so frustrated with himself and the dispute about it, because he's a designer, right?
Sure.
He went and he cut out pieces of the picture and looked at them on different backgrounds until he could see the blue and the black. And you can.
Oh, wow.
If you look at it out of context, it will start to be like, oh, okay, that looks blue, that looks black.
Was he rewiring his brain in real time?
What happens is people will choose whether to cancel out more of a yellowish light like you get from a lamp,
yeah,
or more of a bluish white light like you get from daylight. They don't choose it consciously, but their brain chooses to do that. And if you're seeing the blue and black, your brain is canceling out a more yellowish light than people who see white and gold, who are canceling out a more bluish white light, apparently.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And it's whatever. I complain a little bit about how noisy it got, but hey, this is kind of what this big experiment is about, right? Like, when the masses are all talking about one thing. And by the way, the lady who makes those dresses, their orders are through the roof. And
I'm sure.
And she swears up and down that it was not anything to do with them. They had no marketing plans. It just happened.
There's
to be
no
shot.
Way that could have been a plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. And the thing is, it's stupid to say you're wrong. It's even though it's actually a blue and black, it's not the same blue and black that the people who see blue and black are seeing.
Yeah.
It's not about being right or wrong. It's about the fact that we now have a really good example of how we don't all see the world the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's like also really needs to start making a white and gold version of that dress.
Yeah, bad, why not? People. Double your sales. But it's like that vase, the two vases. You see it in school when you're growing up. The vases, and they're either a vase in the middle or two faces on the side. It's that same idea, but doing it with color like this is sort of fascinating. So I think I at least feel good that we can take away from yesterday something scientific, maybe a little further understanding about how people's visual cortexes work and how they're wired to think about things and all of that. And you know, if we get that on the internet, I'm fine with that. It's not all hate speech and irritated people. Sometimes it's just a dress.
Sometimes a dress is just a dress.
That's right.
And the RGB codes don't matter.
Nope. All three of them, four of them, whatever it is.
Yeah, by the RGB codes, it's like kind of an orangey color, the black, the so-called black.
Yeah, I mean, I took it out and I played around with it in Photoshop, and it was funny because if you change the not the opacity, what am I trying to say? The strength of the color and just kind of moved sliders around, you'd end up with some crazy different kind of combinations that kind of made your head swim a little bit. So they've just kind of perfect stormed this, you know, nobody intended it. If you see the photo on the model that's on the website where they sell this thing, it looks like blue and white. It's as plain or blue and white and plain as day that it was never
gold. Everybody sees blue and white in that picture. Even myself who sees white and gold in the other picture.
Exactly. And it's
so blue and black in the other one. I mean, it's just
so, it's so weird. But yeah, here we are, humans still trying to figure our crap out in 2015.
You know what? We're going to be able to watch to help us do that in the future.
What?
DuckTales, new DuckTales.
What?
Star Fury Zeta sent us this news. Disney XD ordered a new animated comedy series based on the Emmy award-winning DuckTales that aired from 87 through 90. The new series is slated to launch in 2017. Will again star Disney's iconic characters Scrooge McDuck, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and of course Donald.
All right. Chad,
I'm so excited.
You grew up, you had to have grown up with this, right?
I'm so excited about DuckTales. I was editing. I do a Friday morning edit stream where I stream for 3 hours and edit this long project every single week. And today's stream, I was playing DuckTales remastered music from the video game, from the NES video game. Mm-hmm. And we're just singing along at DuckTales. Woo! I'm so excited to hear that this will actually be new, and I hope that they make it good, and so excited.
All right, so I have a funny perspective on this, and I'm going to get some hate for this, but I want to at least lay this out. And this came up on TMS as well, and I took a lot of heat for that, so let's let the heat keep coming, I guess. So when I was really young, and Tom would have been the same age, I felt like you and I grew up a lot with like the original old school Tom and Jerry, Looney Tunes, early Hanna-Barbera, not like Scooby-Doo era, but like the stuff that, you know, was super rad and cool. Tex Avery, Chuck Jones, all that kind of stuff. And that stuff was really special. Those guys were masters in their field. I mean, they really set the bar so high, it was very hard to get back there. So what happens is, and Disney's included in that, but what happens is years later, when I say that years later, I guess like 79 to let's say 89, maybe even into the early 90s, there was an attempt to bring a lot of that stuff back. And I think DuckTales is a good example. So is Animaniacs on the Warner Brothers side. Mm-hmm. And they're beloved by the generations who witnessed those. I watched that stuff and I didn't like either of them. And I'll admit here, it's for kind of a snobby reason. It's because the animation seemed cheap to me. Like, stories are fine, music's good.
So much better.
I would call it worse. Like, it's just not. They tried to capture that same kind of slapstick, fluid, kind of early Chuck Jones, early Tex Avery kind of quality, and I don't think they ever hit it. It came off as budget and low frame rate and crappy to me. And I know sometimes that's you do that on purpose in South Park. There's a reason they do that. They want it to look that way. You do that in The Simpsons or Futurama. It's not meant to be, you know, this 24 frame Disney style cinematic kind of thing. To me, it felt more like, you know, direct to DVD Mulan sequels. They were just low rent to me, and I could never get freaking past it. So I never could enjoy those things. And I think it's purely generational. It's a little snobby on my behalf, but I'm a big stickler for animation and the quality of it. And I feel like that stuff just never held up. So Chad, counter argument, tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, you're wrong because it was actually better. Hanna-Barbera was like the first, like, I don't see how you could look at that and think that it was better than the newer reincarnations. I agree that the newer reincarnations were a lot more commercialized.
Yeah.
Like, they don't seem like they have the same soul. It felt like a lot of the people who were there, you know, just to get a paycheck. where a lot of the early stuff may have had a sort of different passion in different areas that gave a different tone.
It's kind of a punk rock attitude in those early days about what they were doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, I wouldn't say, I would say like maybe the plots were better in the newer ones, but the older ones, like that kind of is part of the charm, is like the plot. It was so bad.
Yeah.
They were just pumping out these things, you know, but that's also part of the charm. You know, I'm excited. I have been amazed, blown away by the amount of really good commercial content coming out over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Adventure Time has just been just absolutely awesome. Unfortunately, none of these are by Disney XD, so I don't have a frame of reference when it comes to their production value. Steven Universe, totally have gotten in mm-hmm. to Steven Universe.
No, stuff's amazing. Everything you've mentioned is absolutely awesome.
Flapjack
is so good.
Flapjack.
Oh, it went away though. Like, it's gone now, and I'm so sad. It's so good.
I know. I mean, it just feels like they've gotten. Oh my gosh, Tom.
I disagree with both of you. I only believe the original Uncle Scrooge comics.
You continue to be the coolest friend I have because he can reach out in any direction and pull something cool.
He's like, one second, let me go get my original Walt Disney Scrooge McDuck.
Huey, Louie, and Dewey, here they are where they belong. Yeah. In the pages of a 10-cent comic.
That is actually amazing that you pulled that out. I know that stuff a couple weeks ago, I said I was amazed, but this is way more amazing that you have that handy. That's crazy to me.
You know, actually, when DuckTales came out, I was in college for most of it. And I would be talking to kids, like my younger brother, for instance, and I would make Uncle Scrooge references, and they would get them. And we would joke about Huey Dewey, you know, and not a lot. Like, this didn't happen a ton, but, like, maybe I'd make, you know, some Scrooge McDuck reference and be like, whoa, how do they do? I guess they're reading the comic. Like, for me, I was referencing the comic, and they were referencing DuckTales.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the same characters and everything. So, in all honesty, I think it's awesome that DuckTales happened in the first place to bring those characters through, and that now they're going to reboot it for a whole new generation.
And I think they'll have a better handle on it this time, because I really do think there's been an evolution in the animation, and there's also been an acceptance of what is possible, what you can do, and also how computers can help the production so it's not as expensive, yet you can get results that look amazing. We see that with all many of the cartoons you just mentioned, Chad. So they probably have a real good chance of introducing this as a new thing to a new audience, pleasing old fans and new fans alike. All of that stuff is good. And we live in kind of a, I don't know, animation renaissance when it comes to television. You've got stuff for all age groups. You have things that are subversive and strange, like Bob's Burgers or freaking Archer or whatever. You've got things in the middle. You've got, you know, The Simpsons really did change the landscape, and a lot of different cool things have come from that. You know, South Park continues to be some of the best satire ever. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got great things like Adventure Time, which are just, you know, whimsical and amazing. And I think we just have a better handle on what can be done stylistically. So I'm less concerned now than I was in the late 80s, early 90s. I will concede this. That NES game is one of the best NES platformers they ever made. It's fantastic.
How do you feel about Inspector Gadget?
He had too many robot arms for my taste.
Well, Netflix announced they've picked up the U.S. rights to a brand new version of Inspector Gadget that has already debuted in Europe. The episodes will start airing in March. They'll also premiere a brand new revived version of Danger Mouse in 2016, along with three other shows, Some Assembly Required, Bodersnikes and Gumbles, and Super 4.
All right, so the one that jumps out at me is the... my scroll wheel just busted. Obviously, I'm familiar with what's going on there with your robot man. Okay, I get it, and
robot
that's
arms.
Fine. Yeah, robot arms. Is that or is that not the European show? Well, you said it right here. It debuted in Europe, but it's not. So it's not like it's new. This is another Netflix cheat where they say it's a Netflix original, but it's really just a borrowed
it's
thing.
It's not a cheat. I mean, it's a way that television used to work all the time, and we would have never called it a cheat, right? If a series is produced in Australia, here in America, it airs on NBC, and NBC calls it their show. We don't call it a cheat. In fact, if For instance, CBS Television produces American Idol, which airs on Fox, and Fox calls it a Fox show. We don't call it a cheat. So all that Netflix is doing is saying, hey, we're going to distribute this show in the United States, and so it's a Netflix original in the United States, and they're actually going to pay some money for that privilege. It's just an old way of doing it, whereas I think the way we react now when we're like, that's a cheat, is we're realizing that we don't need to do things that way anymore. I mean, Netflix made House of Cards by paying the people to make House of Cards and put it on all the Netflixes at once. Yeah. So we're okay with that. Even though Netflix itself didn't make it, they didn't have employees of Netflix making it, because we're like, they got it for all the Netflix.
That's true. The same thing is true for this pilot thing that Amazon just did, or even HBO. This is what they do. They get pitched ideas, and sometimes those end up on their network. Sometimes they end up somewhere else. I read somewhere that Breaking Bad was pitched to HBO, and they turned it down. And it ended up on AMC.
Breaking Bad, I believe Breaking Bad aired on Netflix in the UK.
Yep.
And I'm sure in the UK, Netflix felt fine saying, hey, it's our show here in the UK because we're the ones providing it to you.
Well, Netflix did definitely need to beef up their children's programming. They certainly have a lot of stuff on there now, but to do original stuff or things that are quote unquote original seems like that's a big benefit for them. It's nice to see both them and Amazon covering that market. It's not all gritty crime dramas and weird post-apocalyptic alternate universe history lessons. And by the way, that may be a hint that I finally watched Man in the High Castle. It's freaking fantastic. I cannot wait, Tom. I cannot wait for that to be a full series.
Yeah, it's good. There are flaws. It's not perfect. Mm-hmm. There are differences from the book, so it's not faithful. But it's good. Yeah. I cannot wait.
I'm very excited. We're going to take a tiny break. When we come back, we'll have Chad back on.
Yeah, we're not actually ignoring Chad. No. Connection.
We just lost him. Back. Oh, he's back. There he is. We're not going to take a break. Perfect. We're going to stay right here. Perfect timing, man.
So of course, Chad, who has been sitting here the whole time listening intently to us and did not have connection problems at all. I don't know why I said that.
Absolutely. Ask me anything about what you just said.
He's about to tell us what he thinks of Inspector Gadget. And the fact that the UK or the European version is coming to the US Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. This was one of the other things that as a child just absolutely gripped me. Inspector Gadget was by far one of my favorite cartoons to get behind. And I haven't seen at all what the Inspector Gadget, the UK Inspector Gadget looks like. But oh my gosh, am I excited that Netflix has picked it up. And I'll be able to enjoy that.
Scott Johnson on this one. Yeah. I never liked Inspector Gadget when it was actually on.
It was okay.
My brother loved it. My brother loved it. But I was like, I don't know. He just seems to screw everything up. And my brother's like, that's the point. It's funny.
Yeah.
He isn't the one solving it.
It wasn't my favorite.
He has so many gadgets. Like I think that this is really Inspector Gadget is what started my passion for like cyberpunk later on. Is that he has like a
software guy? If he'd been Inspector Software, I'd been.
That's a good point. It appears to be CGI, so it appears to be sort of 3D animated, Pixar sort of style stuff. So there's that. They're not going traditional 2D cell animated anything anymore with that show. So that's interesting. I've heard from a few people in the UK on another show that really like it over there. So whatever. Bring it for the kids. Bring it for Chad. Tom and I will, I don't know where we'll go.
Sure, we'll
live. It'll just live on Netflix. You won't care. You'll just have it available if you want it.
There you go.
Now let's move into real life. Batsuits. Yeah. Hobbit from PA sent us this one. A Philadelphia University student made himself an actual bat suit. It won't actually take a bullet, but Jackson Gordon says that it can withstand punches, machetes, and baseball bats. He studies industrial design, has a black belt in kung fu. So he thought, I should design a bat suit that has ease of movement in mind so I can do my kung fu in it. He raised the money to build the suit on Kickstarter and then debuted it at an anime con called Katsucon.
I think what I saw was a vine from that con because it's now all starting to come together for me. There was a shot of somebody who was demonstrating what looked to be kind of a bat suit, and a guy was punching him as hard as he could in the chest, and it wasn't hurting this guy.
It's probably hurting the guys who was punching him.
Probably. But what was cool about it, and I have very little info beyond this, but what I could tell was happening visually, the impact of the punch seemed to be distributed so well across the plate of the front of this thing that it wasn't even making him move very far. Like, normally you'd at least get more impact and sort of push him back or whatever. But, like, if, you know, kicking your friend in the cup, yeah, it didn't hurt him, but it would send him backwards, you know. I assume everyone else did that, not just me. But anyway, this looked like it was just really well designed, so that the punch just kind of spread out. It was like a ripples in a lake, kind of. It was really cool. It looked awesome. Chad, you want one? You want to buy one?
I do. I do. In fact, I would like the cross between the medieval and the Batman, so I could go to Renaissance festivals and have like a leather, you know, bat suit sort of thing. I think it would look really great with maybe instead of a bat, like a dragon on the front.
Mm. Are you going to MineCon, by the way? That just reminds me of that. Are you going to go to that MineCon in London, or are you not going to go?
I'm absolutely going to MineCon in London. Super excited.
That's awesome, dude. That's way cool. Yeah, that's coming up soon. So watch for that, everybody. And watch for your bat suit, apparently, and support the Kickstarter if you like it.
And watch for drones. Magoo JC pointed out that a company called Techover and some European researchers in Portugal, but who knows, they might show up at MineCon, successfully tested a project called Brain Flight that uses EEG, electroencephalography, to detect your brain activity so that you can control a drone. You wear a cap, it detects your brain activity, commands are sent to the drone, and the drone does what you want. It takes some learning, apparently, but eventually you can control a small drone with your mind.
Is this the same tech that you see people use with computer stations where they're like, all right, think of left and...
Yeah, or that ball that you can levitate by, you know, you think harder and it blows more air and then the ball rises.
Yeah, same idea. I just don't wear this like around in airports and stuff. That's all I would say. Doesn't that seem bad?
Or like, around any government building at all.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you're going to look weird because it's a prototype and it's not very fashionable yet. Also, it's not going to control the planes, Scott. It only controls the one drone.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Because what I mean by that.
You'll see Scott wearing this thing with wires
trying
coming
to
out
control
of his head.
An American Airlines jet.
Just staring at jets. Just
but my thinking
why
is,
won't it land?
You don't want the quadcopter to, you know, like if your brain's, if you're suddenly going, all right, focus, go forward. Man, I could sure go for a cheese sandwich. And then it flies into it.
No, that makes sense. Well, and they say they have algorithms that actually guard against that sort of thing happening.
Yeah.
If you just lose focus or have some sort of interruption of the signal, etc.
It's interesting because the drone thing continues to be one of the most fascinating areas of tech right now. I think this 3D printing and maybe VR are kind of in the triumvirate of the hot deals. And I don't know where it all ends, but I do know that more than it's ever been, this thing that seems like a hobbyist thing like RC cars or something is so much more than that. Now you've got big corporations trying to figure out how to give farmers ways of checking their crops at night. And, you know, we've talked about on the show other uses and other functions that these things can provide beyond just, hey, this is fun to fly around and take pictures with. You know, filmmakers alone are kind of stumbling over each other trying to get the best way of using those in their productions. So I continue to be fascinated by it, and I'm never shocked. Like, you can tell me, oh, you can control this one with your brain. Pretty soon there will be one that runs on carrot juice or some other weird ass, you know, variation to this thing. And I say that's great. That's usually a sign of big innovation coming and a crazy cool technology getting fleshed out because people are kind of going nuts over it. So, yeah, bring it.
I wish they would do more with this mind control stuff. I mean, this is the next step into cyber brain, like being able to interface with a UI that isn't there and being able to think something and having a computer do it. I really want to see a lot more development in that sort of sphere.
Well, I think you're going to.
Yeah, especially
I really want to.
Medical uses for this stuff is really intriguing. You know, having people be able to get limbs to do things they couldn't do before. You know, there's all kinds of applications. But as usual, the porn industry needs to take advantage of it first, and then everything else will follow.
Absolutely.
That's my thinking.
Control it with your mind. All right. Yesterday, this will wipe any of those kinds of thoughts out of your head. The United States Federal Communications Commission voted 3-2 to adopt an order for new open internet rules.
What? This happened?
It happened.
I can't believe it.
So if you're a Republican, you are incensed. And if you're a Democrat, you're cheering. But broadly, the rules will enhance the existing transparency order and prevent blocking and discrimination under the authority of Title II of the Communications Act of 1934. The new rules have not been made public yet. The FCC must receive and respond to dissenting statements from the commissioners who voted against the rules. Once that's happened, the rules will be published in the Federal Register, and then they don't go into effect until 60 days from the date of publication. So the rules are also not in effect yet.
So you've been, I know, covering this all week, and it's kind of been a huge focus for DTNS and for all the tech reporters that I know. How fierce is the fight? How likely is it that these new rules will be made, manifest in the lives of people and corporations and whatever?
Well, first of all, and people who are for or against this are probably going to be mad at me for saying this, but I don't think these matter very much. I think these rules really aren't going to have nearly the level of effect that people think they will have, neither positive nor negative. But that's almost impossible to prove. So that's just my opinion, and you can call me crazy and throw something at me if you disagree. That's fine.
Something soft, though.
What I do think is actually going to happen, though, is the U.S. Congress will probably, will certainly present a bill and probably pass a bill that will take away the FCC's authority to do this. The president will veto that bill. And in the meantime, someone, whether it's AT&T or Verizon, probably not AT&T because they need a merger approval right now, but maybe Verizon or maybe a lesser telecommunications company will sue to have the rules overturned, which is what happened to the last two sets of rules, not just the current set, but the set before that as well. And that there will be a lawsuit. My guess is that lawsuit will probably be the last word one way or another. Either the telecommunications companies will win and that will be the end of that, or the FCC will win and these rules will stay in place.
Okay. So, but not unlike a lot of things in government, is it possible this thing just gets whittled on both sides to the point that it's near impotent, like you already claim it might be?
Yeah, well, that's the problem with asking me that.
You already think it is.
Some people are saying like, oh, this is the government getting into the business of the internet. The government's been in the business of the internet. The internet was under Title II through most of the 80s and 90s, and even as far as DSL into the early parts of the 2000s. So this isn't new.
Yeah.
What my guess is this is all about, without getting too detailed about it, you can go listen to Thursday's DTNS if you want to hear more, is this about protecting your business model. If you're Verizon or AT&T, you have a vested interest in things staying exactly the way they are because you have a good profit margin because you built your business on the way things are right now.
Yeah.
And so it makes perfect sense for them to say, no, we don't want these rules because they give our competitors an advantage. And if you're a competitor of them, or if you're someone like Google whose business is going to have an advantage, either rolling out Google Fiber or just running search, with these kinds of rules, then you're going to be for these kinds of rules. Yeah. It's all about who follow the money. Whoever makes money off one side or the other is pushing for that side or the other. But honestly, I when you say get whittled away at, it really depends on who's in office, who complains, and how the complaints are handled as to whether these are effective in any way.
Yeah, and your point is the wood is already tiny and whittled, and kind of not. You're not going to make much of a little sculpture out of it at this point, anyway. Because it's already kind of a little twig, right?
It will definitely keep blocking and paid prioritization from happening, but I don't know that those were going to happen anyway.
Mm. Well, Chad, you're a content creator, and I know that none of these things affect us too much in terms of, the trickle-down is not going to hit us necessarily, but as a guy who wants to put up a bunch of content, stream a bunch of videos, have a bunch of stuff happen on YouTube, I assume that you're all for at least some sort of net neutrality enforcement.
He would be would let him speak.
Maybe this is a sign.
The ISPs want to keep Chad down. They don't want him to speak his mind.
No wonder. Chad.
I'm being suppressed.
You are being suppressed by the net neutrality hogs.
Gosh.
Wait, who's in charge? I don't even know.
I was still laughing over the government not having much wood joke. that was all I got.
Well, that's good. You didn't miss much. Yeah.
I don't know what you guys were talking about. But did you see Verizon's response?
Yes, it was hilarious.
That was so funny. So they responded with a press release that was written in Morse code, as if it was still the 1930s.
Yeah. Because in their mind, hey, you're invoking 1930s era regulation, Title II stuff. And that's, I notice a lot of people are harping on that. But they don't seem to harp on that when they're referring to the Constitution, which is a lot older than 1930.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, it's like, oh, and
old laws are bad laws.
From 1996 is any better at this point? Like, none of them are really, like, pertinent to the current internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my problem with all of it.
Right. And that's, and so in a way, they have kind of a valid point, but what they're not getting into the nuance of it. Most of it is just like, you really want the 1930s to govern our modern day internet? It's not, that's not that simple. That's not really.
You really want the 1770s to govern? Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
That's not the good point. If you want, there are great points in objection to these. That's not the one.
That's not the one, indeed. All right. Well, what else we got here? We got one more. What's this one?
Oh, yeah. So Pebble, makers of smartwatches, launched a new watch called Pebble Time. And they did it on Kickstarter, which they definitely do not have to do. They are a successful company, but they launched on Kickstarter in 2012. So they wanted to sort of go back to their roots. They wanted to give people who had backed them on Kickstarter the first time around sort of a second shot to help them out. But it's basically just fancy pre-orders. If you back them on Kickstarter, then you get a discount on the new Pebble Time. If you backed them the first time on Kickstarter and you do it again, then you'll get a special engraving about that. But it's just a way to get the press out about the new Pebble Time, which is actually very interesting. It's got a color e-ink screen, a microphone, and a new interface called Timeline. So instead of accessing your data through apps, you access your data chronologically through an interface where you go backwards in time, and you'll see like an email that you missed or a sports score for that happened. You go forwards in time, you'll see an alarm that you set or the weather forecast. So everything's arrayed chronologically, and you access your information that way.
So I think Pebble's cool, and I like it as an alternative, and I'm glad it's popular and they do well and all this stuff. And I think the Pebble Steel of all of them has been the best looking, but I went to look at these kind of with some excitement. And I came away going, these look like Fisher-Price kids' watches. And I think it's that e-ink color screen that's throwing me off. I don't know if I want that. And I know it's a super bad judgment just based on a couple of pictures in the video, but it looks janky to me. Chad, where are you at on this thing?
Because I owned an original Pebble, the black and white. And nice. And I'm really excited about this new Pebble. I haven't backed them yet. I didn't actually back the original Pebble either. I waited until it was in the market. The new operating system looks leaps and bounds better than the current one. I'm really excited about Timeline. This is the only smartwatch which will last for about a week without recharging. Something I don't remember seeing was how do you charge the Pebble, because the original Pebble had these pogo pins on the side, which I didn't really like.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they changed that or not. That'd be interesting. I mean, I've always felt like those would be a good argument for wireless charging, wireless, those pads you put them on or whatever. But I don't think they're doing that either. So I'm not sure if that's changed here. I just think they're kind of fugly. I want them to look better. And I feel like if I'm going to do the watch thing, I need it to look cool.
That's because you're an Apple guy,
I guess. Yeah. But I don't think even the new Apple thing looks cool. I mean, they look all right. They look fancier or whatever. But none of the smartwatches on the market here or the ones that have been announced and shown.
Moto 360. You don't like that one?
It's too big. That dish on there is like the size of a. I don't know what that. It's like a grandfather clock or something. That thing is a honker. Yeah. It's just this. They're not there yet with size and aesthetic, and they'll get there. All of them will, but I don't
think
know
the advantage of the Pebble, and tell me if you think this is true, Chad, is that it is focused on what it actually does versus looks. And so I don't disagree with you, Scott, that it's not the prettiest thing in the world, but I think what Pebble's saying is we'll worry about that later. This is for people who actually want to do something with a watch, and it's not the worst looking thing in the world, and it gets the job done.
Yeah.
They've also really focused on doing what they can do really well and not trying to reach out beyond what they're capable of. The original screen, you know, they never tried to push. You could, if you wanted to, tweet from it, but like, they never tried to push that sort of thing, those sort of things to the screen. And I think now with the updated version, it'll be faster. It'll have the colored screen. And they're really, really focusing once again on what it does well rather than trying to capitalize on something else.
Yeah. Well, time will tell, but what we'll tell you now, not time. Get it? No, time will tell. That Tom has a new book coming out. We want to mention that real quick. Tom, tell people about it.
Hey, thanks, man. Also, thanks for doing the cover of the book.
I love doing it.
It's amazing. The book is called Citadel 32. It's a novel, and it's probably about as good as Lot Beta. If you liked Lot Beta that I wrote, which I thought was readable, I think you'll like this too. It's set in the future. Part of the story is told on a moon base that has lost connection with Earth because some terrible tragedy, disaster happened on Earth. And so they've been trying to survive for generations without anybody on Earth to send them supplies. And they discover something which may or may not, you know, hold the key to reconnection, which is a big deal there. And then the other part of the story is told down on Earth in a sort of post-apocalyptic landscape of people rebuilding Earth. And this monk of the Citadel finds this sculpture, which may or may not be more than just a sculpture, and maybe another part of this mystery. So that's what the story's about. If for no other reason, buy it for the cover by Scott Johnson, and you can find, I'll add all of the places you can get it as they come open. Right now, it's available on Kindle as an ebook and available in print and as an EPUB from lulu.com. But all of those links are at tommerrittbooks.com.
Go check it out. If you're coming to Nerdtacular, get the book, bring it. Tom and I will sign it. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Art and author.
Or if you have the Kindle ebook, take a screenshot, print it out.
Oh, even better, dude. All right, well, that's a good lead into this.
America scores and wins.
Oh, that music can only mean one thing. It's time for the pop quiz. This is where we quiz our guest on their knowledge of an area of their expertise. If he gets an answer correctly, you hear. If he gets it wrong, you hear. And you never hear
smoke weed every day
unless you're Chad. Chad is his topic today is Minecraft trivia.
Never heard of it.
I know,
gosh.
Brand new deal for you to deal with.
Yeah.
We have a great email coming up later. I can't wait to ask you about that. But before all that, let's get to this quiz. I'm going to ask you these questions. You answer them to the best of your ability. Tom will score it any which way he sees fit, which is often kind of strange and broken. And then at the end, you'll get your score. Here you go.
Not strange or broken, Scott. It is a very detailed, thick, and complex set of guidelines.
Right. It's one man's net neutrality is another man's oppression. All right, there you go. Here's your question, starting with this one. How many blocks of iron ore does it take to make one iron ingot?
One.
In Minecraft.
You are correct. Okay. That is correct, in Minecraft. In Minecraft, what is the only mob to have a higher health than Enderman?
Ender Dragon.
You are incorrect. It is Iron Golems are the ones, according to
that's
this.
That's wrong?
It might be wrong.
I'm going to give you a half point. Maybe they're wrong bonus.
What about Wither? That doesn't make any sense. Okay.
All right, fair enough. Next one. How many colors of wool are there in the game of Minecraft?
16.
You are correct. Man, you're going to ace this.
And you actually do get a point for every color of wool, so that's 16 points.
Oh, good Lord. See what I mean? It's weird. What year was the Xbox 360 version of Minecraft released?
2012.
You are correct. Nicely done. Where was Minecon in 2011 held?
That would have been Vegas.
You are correct. That was a controversial con that year. Mm-hmm. What item needs to be smelted in a furnace to form glass cubes?
Sand.
It's true in real life, too. Oh, very good.
Right.
You also get a half point bonus for not making a pun out of the word smelt.
Well, he who smelt it made glass. Okay.
Now
made
Scott
glass.
Just lost a half point.
Next up, second to last question. What kind of blocks can Enderman not pick up?
Snow.
Nicely done. Jeez. You played a lot of Minecraft, but this I already knew. Yes. I've seen you play it, so I know what you're doing. Final question. What are the only two blocks affected by gravity in the world of Minecraft?
Sand and gravel.
You are correct. Nicely done. Tom, he killed it, dude. How'd he do?
Yeah, it's not bad. Out of the 8 questions, Chad scored a final total of 23 points.
Jeez.
Wow.
That stands as one of the highest scores, if not the highest we've had.
Can I give you one more? Yeah. Affected by gravity would be activated TNT.
Oh, wow. Is that true? I didn't know that. Oh, yeah, because, you can drop it. That's true.
Yeah. Drop it like it's TNT.
Now, does he get a bonus point for that, Tom, or a cocky point minus for that?
The scoring has already been registered.
Oh, okay. It's a final deal, then. Congratulations.
The end of photo. Thank you.
Yay. Hey, dreamed it. Really one of the best scores we've had. That is the truth.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It's time for Forecast. It used to be a show. Now it's a segment. And we've done this with...
It sounds so sad.
It does, doesn't
we
it?
We used to spend a whole hour on this, and now we just spend like a few seconds on it.
Now it's
most
just
of you didn't listen, so we just shrunk it down.
We have way more listeners listening now that it's a segment than we did before. But
I know there's two of you out there going, I listened.
A lot of people are very fond of Forecast. They're just a very exclusive group. Here's the one I threw in here. I think that we are closer to world peace than we've ever been, and I mean like everybody lay down their arms, work together, common potential government, basically get our
peace wrong.
I did, didn't I?
Because I thought you were like, we're closer to world, like piece of pie.
A piece of
which
world,
would
yeah.
be a perfectly world acceptable.
Yeah, big chunk of world. We're so close to it.
No, we're closer to true world peace.
World peace, P-E-A-C-E. And it's coming and it's close and it's like Starfleet level, like we find out other planets exist and other people are on them. And so we've got to band together and be a world government and nobody's fighting anymore. And we all kind of, you know, erase our differences. But for that to happen, there is at least one major giant world war that will happen before we can do it. Something huge that will involve nukes. It'll have true, large, huge scale devastation. Like, that's what we have to face before
like,
we can
goodbye,
finally figure
Australia.
It out.
Like, goodbye, Australia. It was nice knowing you, I'm sorry. You're a casualty.
See you later, Queens penal colony. You're out.
No one lived in Antarctica anyway. No one will miss it.
Right. California? Who cares? Oh, wait. You guys are there. Tom, do you think I'm full of crap? Like, where's your head at with that?
Oh, man. There's some really good precedent for this. If you don't listen to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, he's going through the history of World War I right now, and it's very instructive in drawing parallels between different eras. One thing that I learned from that is after the Napoleonic Wars, we always think of the World War I as being called the war to end all wars, and then, World War II happened. After the Napoleonic Wars, everyone thought war was done. They're like, there'll be skirmishes maybe, but no one had a self-interest in actually pursuing war. Mm. And yet World War I still happened. And I'm not going to go into all the reasons why, but essentially after World War I, we thought, well, now we've learned our lesson. But World War II happened, you can argue, as an extension of World War II, because it was a direct result of conditions placed on Germany and World Depression, which a lot of people argue was a result of the war, et cetera. Yeah. So if you kind of chunk those together, we have this unprecedented era of peace after World War II, and not that we didn't have wars, but we definitely had fewer wars, and we're having fewer wars all the time. But a lot of times I feel like humanity needs that reminder that, you know, hey, this is why war is a horrible
idea. We've been here
idea.
Before. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we've been at the peace level and there was war once again.
Yeah. Plus,
you know, I wonder what the face of war would look like. Mm. Would it be like I imagine in my limited scope of what World War One and what World War Two was like of these skirmishes over territories and borders and things like that? Would that still be what the face of what would World War Three look like?
That's what's so hard to answer, because if you asked someone before World War One, what will the next war look like? You know, they would have described something different than the Napoleonic Wars. But they would have still talked about horses. They still would have talked about charges. You know, they would have had an entirely different mindset. This idea of mechanized war was impossible to conceive of, even though they knew it was possible. Mm-hmm. And I think we're probably close to that situation now, that if we had a large scale war, I don't think we really know what computers and automated systems and all of the technology that we developed would actually mean on a worldwide scale.
Yeah,
we know what it means on little insurgency battles, you know, and smaller scale wars, but I'm not sure we really do know.
Well, and this is part of my theory, is that we won't actually know what this feels like until everybody is somewhat equally affected by it, because wars where there are clear winners and in some cases untouched winners. You know, Pearl Harbor, while that is part of this nation, was all that was ever really touched in World War II in terms of, you know, any real devastation. But the rest of the world really felt it in very meaningful, deep, deep ways. So it, and I'm not just speaking the United States here, any future world war where this kind of peace can come out of it, I feel like there has to be sort of equal impact everywhere. And maybe that's impossible to ensure, or maybe that's impossible to create that kind of devastation. I don't know. But what it can't be is a bunch of computers flying drones around, because then it really, you know, nobody really even who's doing the devastation even sees the devastation. It's like they're playing a video game, and, you know, if nothing gets perpetrated on in the home soil of nations who are used to not losing, then the effect is just kind of lost, in my opinion. So I'm not, I am not a doomsayer. I don't want a new giant world war. I just have this notion that before we really figure it out, if there is that moment, something big and ugly happens. And that's my theory. Boy, that's a sad theory, isn't it, now that I think about it?
I have one sadder.
Oh, but give it to us. Lay it on us.
So I just finished watching a Netflix documentary. Well, it was on Netflix. I don't know if Netflix produced it. Called Money for Free. Money, what was it called? I forget what it was called. Here, let me look it up. Money for Nothing. There we go.
Chicks for Free.
Really enjoy, Chicks for Free. Money for Nothing. I really enjoyed it. But it made me feel like in the next few years, we will reap what we have sown in the beginning, basically ever since the dot-com burst. It feels like we've been pushing off and pushing off and pushing off some sort of economic slump here in America, and possibly that would transfer to the world economy as well. I have a feeling that at some point, maybe in the future, there will be a pretty bad economic slump for many years, and then I hope that we'll learn our lesson.
Mm. Worse than the one we just had. Good.
Yeah, yes. probably worse, right? Like more like imagine everybody's in the state that Greece is in, for example.
Yes,
that'd be real bad.
Lots of olives.
Or great. Hey, if we're all nice and hot and sweaty there,
Spanakopita.
Yeah, this is Sparta. Kick people down the well. I know how mm-hmm. it works. But if we're all on the same, see, it seems like it's just like if we were all in the same boat, whether it was all flying high or all flying low, either of those options are better than the huge disparity. That's where I think the problems come from, don't they? I mean, it's not that you don't want people to be, you know, do well and have nations succeed.
Well,
and
these two ideas may go together, because yeah. a lot of people think that the lack of disparity in wages is a result of the wars bankrupting people in the middle of the 20th century. Mm. And that this wage inequality that people talk about is merely us going back to the natural state of things that existed before the war. And so maybe Scott's war is the only way that that disparity is corrected again. And maybe Chad's depression is a precursor to that war.
Mm, see? Also, Scott's yeah. War is the worst Netflix original documentary. Don't watch that one.
I hope both of you are wrong, because I don't want to be poor and dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would stink.
I guess if I'm poor, it doesn't matter if I'm dead.
You don't have to be.
I want to die rich.
Yeah. I want a bunch of money.
I want to die not poor.
Please. Well, Pontom, hey, poor. You don't have to be poor anymore.
I would just rather not die.
We got some feedback. An email came in the form of an email. You can always call us here too, 801-471-0462. People are always scared to use that for some reason. 801-471-0462 or currentgeek@gmail.com. Here's an email from Todd, a.k.a. Chilingo T is his name. It's kind of cool. Says, hey, Tom and Scott, what's your theory? And by the way, I pulled this for a very specific reason today. What's your theory as to why so many people are playing Minecraft on YouTube and why that's become so popular as a result? It seems every other video recommendation that YouTube gives me is someone playing Minecraft. Love to hear your thoughts, Todd.
Wait. Who would possibly know how to answer this, Scott?
Well, if only we had someone on the show who plays a lot of Minecraft, who just aced a Minecraft test, and who publishes a very popular YouTube channel about said Minecraft.
Well, I'm sorry, folks. That's all the time we have.
Can't find that guy.
No. What do you think, Chad? Why is it, man? Why is that game the juggernaut thing that it is? And I don't mean just the game. I mean, the game's got all kinds of reasons for being great. But what is it about the marriage of it and Let's Plays and YouTube and Twitch that makes it such a magical combo?
I think it's the same reason that Bill Gates is a billionaire. It was right place, right time. I feel like there's this whole form of entertainment that was happening, you know, right at the point where Minecraft hit the scene. And Minecraft was the perfect game for people who make YouTube videos to use as their foundation for getting their personality across. It's so open. You can do anything with it. You could be a complete derp and have fun and build stupid looking pixel art. And you're on the exact, you have the exact same possibility that people will like and subscribe and watch your YouTube videos as someone who is incredibly technical, has, you know, a master's degree in, you know, physical electronic design. And both of those people can make, you know, videos on YouTube. I really think that there was at the moment that the YouTube creator was being forged, that Minecraft was there for that person to use it. And if it wasn't Minecraft, it would probably have been a different game. Mm. And I think right now there's a lot of momentum with Minecraft. I feel like Minecraft will forever be a thing now. It's like Pokemon. There's this, you know, humongous spike of Pokemon. But there are still Pokemon fans. There's still people who play Pokemon religiously.
Mm-hmm. That game they sell millions of those games when they come out with new ones.
That's exactly.
Mm-hmm. And exactly. Warcraft is what Pokemon was 10 years ago.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. I mean, these things, you're right. In the pantheon of game history, Minecraft absolutely has a place in that history book. And it's an important place. And I think a place that still isn't fully defined. You could today, there are people listening to the show today, could say, I'm going to start a YouTube channel dedicated to playing the Minecraft mods and stuff. And you actually genuinely have a chance to get a good following and do pretty well. Like, that's still, there's still an open gate for Minecraft content.
I think at one point we thought, oh, well, it's over, no one can do it. And then this guy called Stampy Longhead comes along. And friggin' just blew everyone out of the water and started getting like tons and tons of growth. And he just had a different take on it. You know, I think the market is definitely still open. Someone asked, has Minecraft hit its peak? It may have. The peak may have been over. Microsoft now owns them, so they could easily come out with a Minecraft 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to realize that the core team on Minecraft is really small. And if you put the amount of team that, say, is on a Halo, which Minecraft, you know, dwarfs Halo in terms of numbers, you could potentially have a Minecraft 2 completely rebuilt from the ground up with more features than normal Minecraft.
Yeah, that is such an interesting prospect, because they have to, maybe more than ever, that company has to be so careful about what that sequel is and how it works and what it doesn't take out, what it leaves, what it, you know.
Like, don't kill the golden goose.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And your gold, you know, your golden goose creator is living in a giant mansion in California and doesn't want to play it anymore or do anything with it. So you kind of have that legacy. And it's an odd thing. It's one of the oddest things in gaming history, and continues to just be this weird freaking thing that generates revenue and their entire sub-industries created by Minecraft playing. It's just crazy to me.
Yeah. Well, I strongly predict a Minecraft 2. Yeah. It's just Microsoft has put them in a core. Like, it's like the way that Mojang managed what Minecraft used to be does not, everyone realizes it does not fit with the normal Microsoft business model.
Yeah.
Microsoft has Xbox, but you can buy Minecraft on PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
You know, Minecraft, the best selling Minecraft experience is on, was only ported to Windows Phone after they bought the entire franchise.
Sure. It sells more on iOS devices than consoles. Like, and that's in, you know, Apple territory. Like, it's the weirdest thing for Microsoft to own now, because now it's literally a multi-platform thing that are on devices they would normally never publish on, like, ever.
Do you think, though, that it's like Facebook buying the Oculus Rift? In other words, Facebook bought it because they wanted to diversify and they wanted to have something that really wasn't related to Facebook, and maybe they'd take advantage of it a little bit, but they didn't want to change it. They wanted Oculus to be Oculus. Do you think Microsoft is looking at Minecraft like, stay on the PlayStation, do what you want, be yourself. Mm. We want to use you as a diversification, as a way to have something that isn't Microsoft's business model.
Well, maybe they, maybe Microsoft, or maybe Minecraft didn't land on those platforms. In Microsoft's mind, those platforms are landing on Minecraft. Maybe that's how they see it, because it behooves them all to have Minecraft. It isn't the other way around. They're not, PlayStation's not doing Microsoft some huge favor.
Right.
PlayStation desperately wanted and now has Minecraft, and they really want that. So it actually puts Microsoft in a position of everybody wants what we have, which is rare.
I don't think
them.
They're diversifying. I think Microsoft is diversified between a consumer console market and a business software market. I think what actually happened was someone looked at we have this Xbox Arcade. Here's the data sheets and this spike. What is this one spike? Oh, that's Minecraft, the most downloaded game on Xbox Arcade. Ever. Who owns it, and are they trying to sell it?
Yeah, that might have been. That's a goodbye. I mean, I hope they didn't ask that question that ignorantly. You know what I mean? Like, they had no idea.
Well, I think Notch wanted to sell. Notch was going around asking who wants to buy this, and Microsoft went, yeah.
Yeah, and we have the cash, so...
Yeah, here's a billion.
2.5, in fact.
2.5. Here's a few billion.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's amazing the difference between just a billion and 2 billion. It's a lot of extra billion.
I know.
It turns out.
Just another Instagram. That's all it is.
That's all it is. Well, it's blogger.com for Google. That's all this is. Let's hope not. Awesome answer. Great email. Thank you for sending that in. Again, that email address is currentgeek@gmail.com. That going to do it for this episode. Chad, you were a great guest. Thanks for being on with us, man.
Thank you so much.
Much appreciated. Happy. Tell people where they can find more OMG Chad, please.
Oh, man. I do a lot of stuff on the internet, so check out the internet. It's a great thing. YouTube.com/OMG Chad is my personal YouTube channel where I do LPs and vlogs. YouTube.com/OMG Craft is my Minecraft show with tips, tricks, spotlights. I do a show on Twit called The Giz Whiz every single week with Dick DiBartolo, where we review ridiculous gadgets, tech gadgets. I also review products on Before You Buy every week, so you can check that out as well.
Busy little pilgrim, OMG Chad. And see him at Minecon in London 2016. This year, right?
Yeah.
When is it? What are the dates?
It's July 4th, actually.
Oh, good. We moved Nerdtacular just in time so that weekend was open for MineCon in London. But that's cool. I'm glad you're going. People should watch for you and check you out.
This
July. Well, thanks, Chad. We really appreciate it. OMG Chad on Twitter, if we didn't mention that. Tom, anything else?
And on Twitch.
Oh, on Twitch.
I'd live stream.
Yeah, you should do that. That's a good thing to do. Tom, you got anything else that we haven't talked about?
Nope, just TomEradBooks.com if you're interested in the book. That's
check that book out, you guys. It's awesome. I'm reading it, and I like it a lot. Although my format is a little weird, I'm reading it in a Word document, but it's because I have special access. It's a little bit different than everybody else. Hey, Andrew Allen does our theme music. Big thanks to him. We don't thank him enough, and we love our theme song. So thank you, Andrew Allen, for that. Oh, gosh, what else? Let's see. Tell people this. They can go to Current Geek on Twitter, @CurrentGeek, @ScottJohnson, @AceDetect. currentgeek.reddit.com, currentgeek.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for Chad. We'll see you next time.
Hi, this is Phil, back with another game-punting pick of the week from the world of crowdfunded tabletop games. This week, I'm backing Renaissance Wars by US Game Systems on Kickstarter. This is a card-based board game where the players take on the persona of a major historical figure from the Renaissance and then use their unique abilities to influence the outcome of the gameplay, with the goal of being the first player to amass sufficient florins, which are the game's currency and victory points, to emerge as the leading figure at the end of this era of history in the year 1647. The combination of each player's special abilities and periodic random events, which dramatically alter the board state, add a lot of welcome but manageable complexity to an otherwise straightforward suit-based card battle mechanic. Featuring excellent graphic design and plenty of reproduced artwork, the game really looks great on a table. So Renaissance Wars can be had with a pledge of $50, but the higher levels will add more historical figures to play with and are probably worth the small upgrade. While not yet at their funding goal, they are making excellent progress and should expect to start working towards stretch goals soon. This campaign will run through March 20th. For more news and reviews of crowdfunded tabletop games, check us out on the Game Punting Podcast, available in iTunes or at gamepunting.com. Happy gaming!
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at another interesting story related to the Super Bowl, this being Katy Perry trying to enforce IP rights in the left shark of the halftime show. Katy Perry provided a number of nifty visuals and performances during her multi-song halftime show, but the one that transcended the night and turned into the latest internet meme was her performance of the song Teenage Dreams, where dancing beach balls, sharks, and trees surrounded her on stage. The shark dancing on the left side of Perry was hilariously out of choreography and sync compared to the right shark and the rest of the dancers. That led to an explosion of left shark parodies and commentary online. Of course, this also led to people trying to profit off this sure-to-be-short-lived sensation. One of these people was Fernando Sosa, who started selling sculpted figurines of the left shark on his website Political Sculptor. Katy Perry put her best attorneys on the case, and they first sent a cease and desist letter to Sosa based on an alleged copyright claim. However, when this story hit the news, legal experts weighed in and confirmed that the left shark costume likely was not copyrightable subject matter. Costumes and other garments are useful items not typically subject to copyright, except for design elements that are separable physically or conceptually from the garment and having originality beyond just contributing to the costume's intended appearance. The left shark costume is a full-body costume shaped like a shark with fins, eyes, gills, and teeth, all of which appear to be integrated elements not physically separable or conceptually original beyond the use in appearing like a shark. Thus, a copyright claim would likely fail. That led Katy Perry's attorneys to try something else, specifically filing trademark applications on left shark and right shark. This may just be a tactic to bully small shops and sellers like Sosa out of the market based on the slim potential these applications become enforceable IP rights. But the likelihood that these trademarks will be registered seems slim, as the left shark and right shark terms came out of the internet meme rather than Perry herself. Thus, she will have trouble proving actual ownership in these marks. The bottom line is, Katy Perry and her legal team can't be faulted for trying to protect some profitable moments of fame stemming from her memorable halftime performance. But the claims to IP rights are pretty clearly flawed. If she wants to sell memorabilia and figurines about Left Shark, she will have to just enter the free market and compete with others. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there!